This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is 95.7 The Game.
All right, thank you for that. And as you heard, all the way to Colma, we got every graveyard handled here. Rick Tittle and Michael Urban with you for the next 4 hours, taking your calls and texts. On the topic of sports, or as they say in England, sport. Football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, golf, tennis, auto racing, boxing, Olympics, quidditch, football, chess, checkers, rugby, cricket. We don't care. We just want to talk about sports. We don't care about who you voted for. We don't care about your ethnic heritage. We don't care about home and garden finances, relationships. We are big, dumb gorillas, Philistines. All we care about is sports and urinating in the streets.
Wow.
Rick Tittle and Michael Urban. Are you having the best time, Urbs?
I was until you started talking about urinating in the streets. I don't know where that falls in.
Well, let me know when the show starts. I'm just warming up.
Yeah, they're getting the microphones fixed right now, so I'll let you know.
We do have some guests coming up. Kevin Jones, he is the founder and CEO of Blue Wire and the host of the 49ers podcast, Striking Gold. He'll join us at 2:20. At 3:20, Lindsey Patterson is the Bengals reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer and host of the Bengals Beat podcast on Apple iTunes. And so we'll get Lindsey's perspective from Cincinnati. We'll also talk about the Raiders as they are going to be hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. And I want to remind everybody, Michael Urban, here's the official read, but I'll mention it in other ways throughout the show.
Would it feel more big time if somebody else read it?
Here you go. Read that.
You know what I mean?
Read that.
See, because you're part of this.
And I know. I'm handing it off. Go ahead.
Okay. Join the Black Hole at 95.7 The Game this Sunday at Everett & Jones Barbecue and Sports Lounge in Jack London Square for our pre- and post-game live broadcast. We'll kick the day off at 11:30 a.m. with Raiders opening drive and get you ready to see Oakland take on Kansas City at 1:05 p.m., then stick around for our post-game wrap-up. For more information, visit the events page at 957thegame.com and visit theblackhole.com today to learn about memberships. One thing that is not in this read is who are the hosts of this fine offering.
Now, it's going to be me.
Yes, that's why I wanted to read it, so it wasn't just you pumping your nads.
But now, if this... Pump my nads.
Yeah.
We got urinating the street.
Saturday.
If this was you, you'd be offended, right? When they leave your name off.
Like
very generic open with a Who song that's 45 years old, you get mad.
No, not anymore. Over it, yeah.
Oh, you're over it.
Yeah, I talked to my therapist. I'm over it.
Okay.
But don't you have a partner in crime on this, too?
It's usually Jim Cosimore, but he's out this weekend. He's on assignment, so it's just me.
Okay.
So come on down to the Black... I said come on down to the Black Hole. Come on down to Everton Jones.
Fill that spot of Coase being gone, they decided, nah, we'll just have Rick do it. See, now I am hurt. That should be me. I'm just kidding.
Well, that's a double-edged sword. If they think you can handle it by yourself, then they'll let you do it, and then they save money, see?
Makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, great, you do it by yourself, but listen, I'm fine with it. Been doing this for 31
years. But for the season, you must know that
Rick... It's Coasey.
Rick Tittle and Coasey are going to be co-hosting this most weeks.
Yeah. And maybe the London show, I'll be doing the pre and post from London.
Very nice.
With Coasey at Everton Jones. And by the way, this is a fantastic, I know we're getting a little off topic here, but we have our little read. I just want to expound on it just for a second, Herbs. Because, no, hold on to the read.
Okay.
Yeah, hold on to the read.
Huh? I'm going to do it better next time.
Yeah, do it a little more emphasis.
I'm having the best time right now, Rick. I am.
You know who was the worst ever? And I love the guy.
How did that go from me talking to you know who's the worst ever?
No, I'm just mean at someone reading something. I remember when he was on the 49ers, our very good friend Jerry Rice had a commercial. And it sounded like this. Hello, this is Jerry Rice. When I get tires, I go to Phil's Tire Center in El Sobrani.
Is it that bad?
It was worse than that. But you know what? No one had the audacity to say, hey, champ,
we need a little more life in that.
Right.
That sounds like you're reading.
But remember, at one point, didn't Jerry come out publicly and kind of imply that there was maybe some, I don't know, racial undertones of him not getting as much, like after the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
He says, you know,
he did say that.
Basically
yeah.
suggested that the white quarterbacks will get all sorts of love and ads and all that, and he's not getting any. I wonder why. Well, it's because you sound like a robot when you read. It's got nothing to do with the color of your skin, Jerry.
Maybe there were some racist people out there. The people at Kellogg's? I don't know. I was throwing something out. Well, that was back when, remember, every Super Bowl MVP, what did he have to say into the camera after the game?
Say again?
What did every Super Bowl MVP have to say into the camera after every Super Bowl?
I'm going to Disneyland?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And they immediately got on a plane and went to Disneyland. I don't think they do that anymore.
No?
I think they go to Robert Kraft's South Florida massage park. I don't know where they go.
So didn't the year that Jerry was hacked off about this, didn't he win Super Bowl MVP?
Yes, that was
Steve Young was the guy who...
That was exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and, Steve Young got more attention.
He had a legitimate beef because he was not getting the amount of... I just saw him on a commercial last night. I think our friend Jerry's doing fine.
He's gotten a lot better.
By the way, years ago, I had him in studio, and he came in, and no entourage, just down to earth, one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. Because, mm-hmm. you know, you mean arguably the greatest football player of all time, regardless of position. He could have, you know, not blinged out or anything. I don't know. If you saw him on the street, you just think this is not a superstar. It's just a guy, you know, a fit guy.
Really well-dressed, fit guy.
Yeah, really nice guy. So anyway, we love having Jerry.
I've told
on the
you
show.
My Jerry Rice golf story, right?
Yeah, but tell the people.
Well, if I've already told you, people. They've heard it before, too.
No. You told me when we were golfing together.
Really? Okay,
yeah.
So Cliff's Notes version, I worked at the places. It's down in San Benito. Is that San Benito County, Hollister?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
What do I look like? I grow lettuce?
They have more than lettuce down there. Anyway, I was a sports editor of a triumvirate of newspapers, the Morgan Hill Times, the Hollister Hay Baler, Gilroy Dispatch, and then it became...
The Hay Baler.
Yeah, the Hay Balers.
I love how they just own it.
Yeah, and I believe that's the nickname of their high school as well.
That's awesome.
Right?
Well, the Hayward Farmers, I know. And then we can all feel superior. Oh, you're a farmer. I know, it's stupid.
So... Running those three newspapers took up so much time. This is early in my career where you have to be bouncing from paper to paper if you want to keep moving up. And I was working so hard at these three papers, I had no time to look for another job. So quit that job because the head pro at the golf course, San Juan Oaks, Freddie Couples designed, he said, I'll put you to work. I'll give you 40 hours. I'll give you flexibility to interview at papers whenever you want, but you'll be kind of a jack of all trades. Whatever I need you to do that day, you're going to do it. A lot of what I did was cleaning up the range. Another thing that I became is Jerry Rice's golf partner because he was just picking up the game, just trying to learn how to play, wanted to play with someone, but didn't want to play with Joe Fan and answer a bunch of Niner questions. Mm-hmm. My boss knew that I was used to dealing with athletes, and I was about the same level of golfer Jerry, so he said, why don't you go out with him, see how it goes? I didn't say anything to him, really, till about the 14th, 15th hole, and that's when he spoke up. He says, hey, are you a football fan? Yeah, big football fan. Who's your favorite team? I'm Jets and 49ers. He's like, okay. And I'm like, I was told to leave you alone. He's like, dude, I can talk about football. It's okay. And apparently once we came in, Jerry said, when I come, every time I come here, I would like to play with that guy. And so there were days when I would be off and my boss would call and say, I'll give you $100 if you come down here and play golf with Jerry Rice.
Wow. Most people pay to play with Jerry Rice.
He's a good dude, man. And just the fact that, I mean, that work ethic. He, from the player that he was when I first started playing with him to all of a sudden him getting an exemption in one of those, you know, mini tour type events. Now, he's not at that level, but it just goes to show his maniacal work ethic. I mean, you saw that in action.
Now, was that a double entendre when you said Joe Fan, when Joe Fan did work for the Niners and he just moved up to Seattle?
Didn't realize that.
Yeah. Maybe that was a little Freudian slip. But anyway,
Joe Fan. It's a great name.
Yeah, F-A-N-N. We used to interview him all the time. Now he's working for, I think it's NBC Sports Seattle or whatever, Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or Fox Sports Northwest. Joe Fan.
Okay.
Yeah.
I believe you.
Okay.
I believe you.
He was Niners employee for a long time.
Did you watch Thursday's game, Rick?
Oh, with a fine-tooth comb, the kind that you use for RID, for lice, with a little magnifying glass.
Did you watch it?
I broke it down like a cardboard box for recycling.
Did you break it down through a 49ers prism?
Well, this is the thing. And when I say I broke it down, that means I watched highlights on Friday.
Right.
Okay. That's how I broke it down. But yeah, it's an interesting thing because, you know, college football teams will say, well, I know we lost UCLA, but Temple beat UCLA, and then Florida State beat Temple, but then Cal beat Florida State, but then we beat Cal. So technically, we should be in the
right.
Rose Bowl.
Right.
So when you saw this, how did you see it as a Niners perspective, that maybe the Bucs aren't that bad after all?
It's a really hard thing to read anything into week one or week two for them, and it's a short week. You know, I mean, they had 3 days to recover from their season-opening loss. I don't know. I think it's just too early to say, okay, well, the fact that the Buccaneers won on Thursday, that makes the Niners' victory over the Buccaneers look even better. Because without that, say the Bucs get smoked on Thursday night, then everyone's going to look at the Niners' win over the Bucs and say, see, they're just not that good. But because they actually look decent and won that game, now you can kind of, if you're looking for a way to trick yourself into thinking the Niners are better than they showed on Sunday, that's the way you do it. Say, see, the Buccaneers aren't that bad. The Niners are legit.
By the way, the number to call, 888-957-9570. We have 4 hours, plenty of time for y'alls and your calls. Also, on the Chilton Autobody text line, 95795, just five digits, just 95795. The 831 says, herbs, wow. So you're friends with Rice and Zito. Again, wow.
So I'm guessing there's a little condescension in here,
no,
mocking me just a little bit. Let me be clear.
No, I think it's a legit wow.
But I'm not friends with Rice. I mean, I just...
Well, you were golfing buddies with Rice.
I guess. My boss told me golf with this guy, and he'd pay me to do it. So, yeah, I mean, Jerry's a nice guy, but no, I would not put him on my list of friends. Yeah, Barry and I have been friends for 20 years.
All right.
Like real friends.
Okay. Like you text each
other. Like me and you.
Like, oh, yeah.
Right?
You text me, how about that Melrose place? And then I say, it's been off the air for 30 years. And then I don't hear from you. All right, Charlie in New York, you will go next. There's plenty of lines available. It's Sports Talk. It's me and Herb, so we're going to meander around a little bit of stream of consciousness. As always.
The A's are playing good baseball, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. They're the top wild card right now. 888-957-9570. Chilton Autobody text line 95795. Tittle, Herbs. Come on back at 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Urban and Tittle.
That sounds like a bad law firm. Who's representing your liability in this car accident? Urban and Tittle.
I'm sold.
I'm Rick Tittle. He's Michael Urban. Welcome back to 95.7 The Game on a sunny Saturday. It is nippy here in San Francisco, but I'm sure it's nice everywhere else within the sound of my voice. And you can get in at 888-957-9570, Chilton Autobody text line 95795. And Charlie in New York City held through the break. I'm sure it's balmy back there. How you doing, Charlie?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing? Want to talk about the A's. Mm-hmm. Don't want to jinx anything. But after, I think I called your show the day after, or right after they blew that 4-0 lead to the Yankees, and I wanted to throw up into my mouth when I saw Lance give up two solo shots in the ninth inning. Since then, things have gotten, very impressive for them to take 3 out of 4 out of Houston, especially after losing the opener 15-0. All the young kids that they brought up have all produced. Their schedule from here on out, I think they're playing all sub-500 teams. So let's assume they make the wild card. I have two questions for you guys. Which starter, and assuming it's not Lance, which starter would you go with in that wild card game? And if you had a preference, who would you rather play, Cleveland or Tampa? I'd go with Tanner Roark, but I want to hear your guys' answers.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll go first on that, Herbs.
We already know what you're going to go with. You're going to go with Liam Hendricks. Right?
No, I would go with Sean Manaea.
Okay. Why?
Because he's looked excellent in his first two starts, and I think he's by far the A's best pitcher. And you can look at what you think about it. You have to go back to the spring. Not even the summer. You have to go back to the spring for Fires having his last loss until he got shelled. So he's red hot. Even Bassett is red hot. Roark. And yes, he does pronounce it that way. We're not saying Roark wrong. He does say Roark. He's pitching well. But Manaea is the guy in my mind. I still would go with him. The other thing is preference. I don't care.
Sorry to interrupt. You don't feel like maybe Fires gives you a better chance in terms of just being poised and under that type of pressure? I just haven't seen Manaea perform under, you know, duress, really. And well, I'd be a little bit.
He no-hit a team that was 17-2 last year.
I get that.
Red Sox were.
I get that.
Fires has two no-hitters. It would probably be Fires. I'm just saying.
That's who I would go with.
Yeah. And that would be my next choice. I just think Manaea is a better pitcher than Fires, but he's only pitched a couple of games and he's just coming back. He is a younger kid. But the whole thing about who do I want, I don't care. And the reason I say that is I learned my lesson in 1988 because I rooted very hard for the Dodgers to beat the Mets in the NLCS because the Mets had Strawberry and Gooden and Mick Reynolds and Mitchell and all these fantastic players. And the Dodgers were the worst team to make the playoffs that year. And I thought, I do not want to play the Mets. And then the A's got the Dodgers and they lost the World Series 4-1. Mm. So at that point in my life, I ended, who do I want? Now, how would you answer? Well, we just know about Fires, so maybe you have an answer for Charlie about which team.
Which team I would prefer? I'm with you. You should never look at that. Because as soon as you say, I want this team because they give my team a better chance of advancing, that's taunting the baseball gods. I know you love when I bring up the baseball gods and what are their
names. Yeah, you're a polytheist.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think, look, if your team makes the postseason, be happy with that. You are asking too much of the baseball gods for you also to get the opponent you would like. Just be happy that you're in the postseason. We all know anything can happen, and we know that the A's are one of the top, I would say, five teams in baseball right now. So whoever they're facing, I like their chances.
Last year, they won more games than anyone in the National League, any team. They won 97. If they were in the National League, if any of these three teams with the Indians and the Rays and the A's, they'd all be the top wild card. One of these teams is not going to the playoffs. We know that. And it looks like Minnesota's probably going to hold on to the Central. We'll see. But the whole thing about the light schedule is true because the A's have the Rangers where they are now. Then they are going to be at the Coliseum against the Royals. They'll get the Rangers at the Coliseum again. Then at Angels, and they'll end with four in Seattle. 9 in the final 15 on the road. But that group has a winning percentage of 445. The Indians will be facing teams with a winning percentage of 43. The Rays, because they're in a stacked division, even the Red Sox are a good team, even though they're 10 games out. Their winning percentage of opponents is 517. Now, then again, I remember doing A's pre and post when the A's were going to the playoffs and they were at the Coliseum and the Rangers were mailing it in and they called up these September guys like Jake Smolinski and Ryan Rua and they knocked the ball all over the park because the hell do they care?
Right.
So just because the A's have what looks on paper to be an easier schedule, yeah, I don't see any Yankees. I don't see any more Astros. There's no more interleague. There are some. They're all bad teams.
Everybody, winners and losers, are playing their hardest in September. Anyone who thinks like a losing team goes into September and just mails it in, no, they don't, because just the very reason you brought up, Rick, they've probably brought up some of their top prospects, and they're going to be busting ass. They're going to be coming after anybody who's there. Now, if you are a playoff team, obviously you got to keep playing well. So there's no drop off in September. Some people might think you'll play in some series that should be easy wins because that team's got nothing to play for. That's not true. There's always something to play for.
Will I see you?
I've been meaning to ask you this question, Rick.
Yeah.
I meant to ask you this last week, and I forgot, and it just came up now. It's a good time to bring it up. You are an A's fan. If when the A's were not in the playoffs and the Giants were during their three title runs, did you not watch baseball, or were you interested in, okay, I'm Bay Area, the Giants are Bay Area, I'm going to follow this now since my team's not in it?
Well, I've been in broadcasting since 89, so 31 years. Any Bay Area team that's playing, I watch. Okay, I'm into it. I grew up in an era where the A's fans and the Giants fans didn't hate each other. We didn't grow up in this social media world where they think that they're rivals. Like, people think the Niners and the Raiders are rivals, which makes me laugh. They're rivals in the classroom, in your house, at your workplace, but they're not rivals. They play in different conferences. It's a joke that if you can ask fans, who's your biggest rival? Niners. Ask Niners, who's your biggest rival? Raiders. I mean, it's ludicrous. But I grew up in an era where, you had one team or the other, and you'd tease each other a little bit. But it wasn't pure hate. I grew up in a house because my parents are Bay Area natives.
Mm-hmm.
They were Giants fans for 10 years, from 58 to 68. But then their hometown team, Oakland, got a team. So I grew up in a house where if the A's weren't on, and, you know, growing up, how many times was baseball on TV? Almost right. Never. What you get, what was it, like 12 games a year on TV right. You would actually get? There's no cable. Virginia was the largest of our 13 colonies at that time, Michael.
And there was ice plant at the Coliseum.
Oh, yes, ice plant. I never liked the ice plant because I had ice plant at my house, too, and our wiffle balls would get lost in it.
Really?
Yeah, never cared.
An ice plant?
Yes.
It's not like it's a dense flower.
It is a succulent, which was my nickname in high school. But anyway, moving on, I never had any animosity towards the Giants, and I felt sorry. When I was a kid, I felt really sorry for Giants fans because they were so pathetic, and I had some uncles and aunts and cousins that were diehard Giants fans. And so I always felt sorry for them. Flip that around. Now they get this ballpark and they win three World Series. I love the ambition of them spending money trying to keep that window open, because when it shuts, it's like Joe Lacob. He knows he has to keep this window open. And this is why he's spending money on guys like D'Angelo Russell and right. Making sure Draymond got his $100 million and Clay and Steph are inked.
Statues for everyone.
Yeah, because when that window shuts, it could shut for another 50 years. It really could. You could go back to sucking for another 50 years. So if you have this open window, you got to use every piece of wood, pull cue, toothpick in your house to keep it open if you have that type of ambition.
Wow, sucking for 50 more years.
You never know.
Thank you.
You never know.
Well, I'm glad I made it this far. I'm glad I got to check in and see this. And just real quick.
Yeah.
Sean Livingston, I was so pumped. Look, he retired yesterday via Instagram. And I think I told you he was both mine and my oldest daughter Jackie's favorite player just because of his story. And it's nice to see that everybody seems to get it. That this guy was special. His path was special. We're talking about a reserve who averages 6 or 7 points a game. How many guys retire with that sort of line and end up being the featured story on a Saturday morning in San Francisco Chronicle? I mean, this was a big deal to the Bears, and I don't want to say worried, but I was hoping Livingston would get his due on the way out, and it looks like he is.
No, he's a fantastic player. That pull up jumper, that mid-range thing, which was his bread and butter, mm-hmm. And he had one of the more horrific injuries and was able to come back. And
dude, they were thinking about amputating his leg.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was.
Yeah, it was horrific. You're absolutely right. And Bob Myers told the story when he signed him. He met him down at a hotel lobby in L.A., and Livingston said, I just want to be on the team, and you tell me what you need me to do, and I'll do it. But I also remember game 6 of this year's NBA Finals, and I got there with the team bus because I knew it was the Warriors' last game over there, and I wanted to enjoy every second of it.
Right.
And I was watching warm-ups, and I'm not lying, Livingston pulled up and took that shot 3 in a row and missed all 3, and the ball boy, you know, bounce passes it back to him, and he just grabbed the ball and kind of looked down. And I'm reading too much into it, I know, but I kind of thought in his mind, he's like, I can't hit this shot anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes, you remember Brett Boone, the outstanding infielder, great family lines, mostly with the Reds and the Mariners.
Mm-hmm.
He retired from baseball. Then a few years later, he decided to go to spring training with the Twins. And he showed up at spring training in the Grapefruit League, and he hit like 108. And he's like, now I know. I'm too old. But right. I had to make sure. So I think Livingston knows in his mind that, yeah, somebody would give him a contract. But he can't do what he used to do, and the whole thing about father time being undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
But you think about what he meant to this team and how Kerr called Livingston and Iguodala the adults in the room, and he called the Splash Brothers the millennials.
Right.
I mean, these little passive-aggressive yet good coach-speak type of players coach type of things, little digs, like the way that Kerr digs at Draymond, and sometimes
right. That
flares up.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, my favorite story of that time is Draymond was on the floor and his shoes were untied, and they called timeout, and Kerr said, you're in the NBA and you don't know how to tie your shoes. And then Draymond like tied and went out and dunked, and he pointed. He goes, they're tied now, blank. Little things like that. But yeah, Sean Livingston will never get the statue, I don't think, but he was a very, very important cog in that wheel.
So he's the one guy they're not going to give a statue to?
I don't think Livingston gets a statue, no.
No.
I don't think he gets his number retired either.
Yeah, I'm tongue-in-cheek. His status doesn't warrant a statue, but it does warrant, I'm sure there's not a single Warriors fan who's been a part of all this run and really been enjoying it, that isn't going to forever have great memories of Sean Livingston. I mean, you ask a Warrior fan 20 years from now how they feel about Sean Livingston, and they'll go on for 10 minutes about what a great guy he was, what a great team player he was. And if you look at all the experience that they had on that bench to start the run, you've got Iguodala, Livingston, Steve Kerr, Ron Adams. Like, is there anything that's ever happened in basketball that one of those four guys hasn't experienced real up close?
Yeah.
Probably not. So
between think about Gentry too, who was on the staff.
Yeah, exactly.
Before.
I mean, they just had, and Kerr did it right. A first time head coach, you want to surround yourself with old coaching heads who aren't climbers. They've already done it. They're not trying to get back in the big chair. They just want to be part of the game. But yeah, the experience and the wisdom, the sanity that Livingston and Iguodala brought to the roster can't be understated.
And the other thing, too, is that Sean Livingston doesn't look like anybody you've ever seen in your life. He's got the Cab Calloway mustache, but then he shaves his temples. He just has one of the more distinct looks you're ever going to see.
Have you seen his looks through the years? Somebody it was like 2 years ago, I think. Someone did a slideshow, I think it was 12 or 15 different slides, showing all of Sean Livingston's different looks during his career. I didn't realize this. One is the full-on picked-out afro. Another one, he had the Iverson cornrows. I mean, he's sporting a lot of different looks. And my favorite one was the cornrow one because it was when he was in high school, like 20 days before he got drafted. He turned down a scholarship to Duke, which shows you how bright he is, to get accepted to be Duke. You got to be a pretty decent student for Coach Krzyzewski to want you. But he turned it down, and everyone had him ticketed. He was almost like LeBron back then, not the physical man to everybody else's boy, but he was seen as a player who could be a generational talent.
He was a kid straight out of high school, too.
Peoria in Illinois, I believe.
Yeah, very good. By the way, Chilton Autobody text line 95795 is, even on an NFL weekend, we can meander into some basketball news as well. What do you think, since we're talking a little hoop here, and we will get back to the Niners and the Raiders for sure, the fact that the USA at the FIBA Basketball Championships ended up 7th, which is their worst ever finish when it comes to NBA players participating. And after finishing 7th, Greg Popovich snapping back at some of the critics who most of us are like, how in the hell can you come in 7th? And let me just read you a couple of the quotes here from CBS. Their effort was fantastic about his team. They allowed us to coach them. You give people credit for what they did, and that's it. But it's not a blame and shame game. That's ridiculous. I think it's a disrespectful notion to even bring up something like that. It's like, hey, well, you guys didn't have this guy or that guy. That's so disrespectful to France or whoever else is in the tournament. France beat us. It doesn't matter who was on the team. I couldn't be more proud of these 12 guys who sacrificed their summer. And he goes on and on and on. Guys like Donovan Mitchell and Joe Harris of the Jazz and Nets, respectively, saying things to paraphrase that how amazing 39 days with the best coaches, Pop, Kerr, Pierce, Wright, and it's going to keep them in good stead. After all this, I'm still humiliated, Michael Urban, that as an American, I know we didn't send our best players over there. I'll never be mad at the guys who went.
Right.
Never. It's like people got mad at Iverson in Athens in 2004 for getting a bronze. Mm-hmm. We thought that was as low as you could go.
Right.
How low can you?
I didn't get mad at him. I got mad at Kobe and LeBron who didn't want to show up. So I'm not mad at them. But when you're the United States and you finish 7th with NBA players, you got to come home and with really blowing kisses of apology, not snapping people who have the temerity to criticize you.
Agreed. I think Popovich, first of all, we know what he's doing. He's defending his guys. That's why people love to play for him.
Right.
But I don't blame the guys on the floor either. Did you hear what Kobe Bryant said after the tournament? He basically said, look, if you think we're going to all of a sudden all the superstars are going to say, all right, I'm playing next time. And the next big international tournament actually is the Olympics.
Right.
If you assume that once we get all of our guys that we're going to run away with it, you're wrong. You're not paying attention to international basketball. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But he's saying it's not so much that the USA got beat this year. It's that the rest of the world has caught up to the U.S. It's not they just caught up in this tournament for this tournament. They've caught up in a very general way. There are going to be years where the best collection of talent Spain has to offer is going to be better than the best collection of talent that the U.S. has to offer. That's a tough thing for us to swallow, but it's a reality. Look around the league.
If we send our very best, I don't think anybody can stay on the floor with us if we have our very best players.
I don't know, man. That Spain team looks really good. And they've got good chemistry. They play together a lot.
If we have our 12 best NBA players, I laugh at any other country. I laugh.
How do you laugh? Is
like
it a sinister laugh?
Yeah, it's like this.
That's the best laugh.
According to Mark Stein, by the way, out there in New York, he says that Draymond Green and Steph Curry say that they are going to make themselves available for the Olympics. There you go.
Yeah.
So maybe this is good that they got spizanked, because now for the – and I think more guys would have gone to the Olympics. Remember, Curry didn't go to Rio. It was the first time he didn't represent the USA. And I asked him at his first NBA MVP press conference, look, you always showed up for USA. You had the bad ankles, but you played anyway. And he goes, how do you not play when you get to wear a jersey that says USA?
Yeah.
So
there's some people who clearly don't feel that way. Now, do you think the fact that it was – you know, some people have pointed out that Steph went to China this summer already, right?
And so did Clay, yeah.
Maybe that's why he didn't want to go back. Now, where's the next Olympics going to be held?
Tokyo.
Right. So I don't think that the location of it necessarily is the reason some of these people passed on it. I think it's just, and I told you this when it started, they changed the name to the World Cup. It used to be the World Championships. Mm. I know you might think I'm nuts, but I think if they'd have... For some reason, I think if you're a player and you're kind of on the fence and you're just like, World Cup, I've never even heard of that. Now I'm going to pass. But you hear it's the World Championships, it's a bigger deal. And that's what this was. This was the World Championship.
That's so funny you say that, because I think the exact opposite.
Really?
I think you can have the World Tiddlywinks, or we have the Cornhole World Championships. But World Cup has so much cachet to it. It's like the name
of... Not to Americans.
Not
to American basketball players.
Two different guys. Well, that's the thing, too. They're trying to make it... Well, the other thing is, no one cares about anything called FIBA. There are NBA players who don't know what FIBA is.
Right.
And I don't blame them. They've had long, long fall, winter, spring playing basketball. Hey, can we have you guys for about 5 weeks, and we're going to China, and by the time you get back, camp's about to start, you're like, oy vey, can I not? Maybe when it's at the, if it's the Olympics, give me a call. But this thing, nah. I don't blame them for thinking that, because as much as they want to, now here's the thing, Australia in a friendly beats us, and they have a national holiday.
Yeah.
They let all the kangaroos out of the zoos.
Can we attach a lack of national pride then to the guys who decided, nah, I'm not
going
to go?
No, listen, I don't blame them for not going, as I said, because this is a secondary tournament. But it's like for me, Herbs, I don't care about golf. Okay, I've interviewed tons of golfers. I'm fascinated by how hard it is. I have played, but I would rather watch, I'd rather cut open an apple and watch it turn brown than watch the Masters, right?
But you'd watch me over that brown apple.
But when it's the Ryder Cup and there's an American flag, now I'm interested.
Gotcha.
So I do have that nationalism in me, and it comes out. It's like, wait. And then I remember like 2002, I think I went to Europe, and everyone's like, we beat you in the Ryder Cup, didn't we? We're quite better, aren't we? I'm like, the what? I go, what is that, golf?
And why does all their criticism have to come in the form of a question? Right?
Everything ends in a question, even though it's not a question, isn't it? That's more Liverpool there, a little scouse. But, and then I say, well, wait a minute. It's one country, the United States, against the continent of Europe. So you have to get together all the French, all the Italians, all the Irish, and the Germans just to take us on. We won, didn't we, Blue? And the funny thing is, the captain, when they lose over there, is just pilloried, as they would say. He's eviscerated. And a great line, I'm sure he didn't coin it, but it was the first time I heard it, was when Nick Faldo, who was the captain of Team Europe, lost. And they said, what do you have to say for yourself? Because he had been absolutely just got a lot of stick, as they say. And he said, to the press, I'd like to thank you from the heart of my bottom. It's pretty good.
Well done, yeah.
Yeah.
He should be on TV.
But anyway, FIBA, somebody's like, yeah, I'll play you in some FIFA. No, not FIFA, FIBA, and it's in China. Nah.
So you disagree with Kobe. You think that it's not an issue of just the world is caught up and this is the way it's going to be. We're going to win some, we're going to lose some.
If Kobe thinks the world is caught up, then I don't know what he's looking at.
He basically said, we're going to win some, we're going to lose some.
Are you telling me that if it was Steph and Kawhi and PG-13 and all of our stars and they went over there that they would lose to freaking France with Evan Fournier?
No, but I think I know what Kobe is doing, and it's genius on a certain level. He's making damn sure. I think Kobe's got a lot of national pride, and he's doing what he can in an almost subversive type of way as he's sending a message to those guys, you better get your asses back out there. And that's his way of making sure that the top dogs do, in fact, go. Because when Kobe Bryant comes out and says, look, Kobe's a polarizing guy, right? You either love him or you hate him. There's nobody who's really on the fence about Kobe Bryant. You're one of the top players in the NBA, and you hear, look, we could send our absolute A squad, and it's still not guaranteed to be a victory. The world is caught up. We'll win some. We'll lose some. If you're one of those guys, a Draymond Green, a Steph Curry, aren't you like, even if you hadn't made that decision on your own, well, I'll show Kobe. We're all going to go. We're going to get all the A players, and we're going to show Kobe and the rest of the world that Kobe is wrong and the world has not caught up. I think Kobe's doing this with an agenda in mind.
You think this is a reverse psychology gambit?
A little bit.
Because I disagree with him, will he buy me a ring?
Okay.
You're saying okay for him?
Yeah.
Well,
it's not my money.
Knowing that the USA finished seventh and
they beat Poland.
Yeah, they had to beat the Polska Kielbasas today. Knowing that they beat Poland today, are you embarrassed? Do you give a crap? That's the thing. Like these other countries,
I'm embarrassed by seventh place. Yeah.
Yeah. These other countries are having ticker tape parades back here. No one cares. It was sort of like the World Cup in 2002 in South Korea and Japan. Mexico played the United States in the first knockout stages. The United States won that game 2-0, and Rafael Marquez and others started beating up Kobe Jones. But they showed El Presidente Vicente Fox and his whole parliament watching, wearing El Tree kits. In the United States, President Bush didn't even know the game was going
Crickets.
On.
Yep.
Yeah, he didn't even know they were playing. So I think that's the same thing with this FIBA now, because we're so good at basketball. They're like, wait, last Patty Mills and Matthew Dellavedova, are they still in Baraga together?
Right.
Yeah, so it just didn't resonate. Now, the Olympics is a different story.
And should it be, though? Because it clearly is. For the American players, it's clearly a different
story. This is the NIT of international basketball tournaments.
But how come only the Americans look at it that way is my question.
Because we are the kings, y'all. This is why for us...
Dude, they just had to beat Poland for seventh place. If you're truly the kings, your backup should be able to beat other team starters.
It's lethargy. And as much as Popovich...
Lethargy or apathy?
I think it's... I don't think it's apathy, because I think Kemba Walker and Donovan Mitchell were trying their hardest. But I think it seeps in when you know that this is the NIT of tournaments and no one back in America is even freaking watching.
I think there's a good portion of basketball fans out there that they're not so – it's not all about patriotism. It's about – you know, what's the NBA about? It's about stars. It's about star power. And the coaches have become stars in the NBA. Popovich is probably A1, right? And Kerr is right behind him. Which means they have probably built up some animosity among other fan bases, or probably people who think that, oh, I'm tired of Popovich and his whole berating the sideline reporter act. I think there's probably some American basketball fans that are like, good, I'm glad Popovich lost. He's not all that.
All right. You know what? There's some new tampering rules I want to get into in the next segment in the NBA that have been proposed. And also we need to talk about breaking it down, the Raiders and the Chiefs. Yeah, that'll be at the Coliseum. And, of course, we're going to have the Niners at the Bengals. The Niners stayed in Ohio this whole week, the only state that is round on both ends and high in the middle. Tittle, Herbs, 95.7 again.
Now back to Urban and Tittle.
All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you and Michael Urban. And the number to call to talk sports here at 95.7 The Game is 888-957-9570, the Chilton Auto Body text line. Text away at 95795. Very interesting news from 49er land, Michael Urban. They tweeted out that, well, it's not a surprise that Jeff Wilson, the running back, has been promoted to the active roster. But in order to make room for them, they've cut tight end Caden Smith, who they just drafted out of Stanford in the sixth round. This was a guy who was a huge high school star in Texas, came to Stanford, was a finalist for the John Mackey Award as a junior, forewent, I guess you would say, his senior season, and drafted by the Niners in the sixth round. And he's out of a job, 22 years old. I'm a little surprised. Now, they've got guys on that team. I mean, Selleck is hurt. They like Dwelly. Of course, Kittle's the best. No relation. Toilolo, all 6 foot eight of him, also from down on the farm. But Caden Smith, released. Are you surprised?
No, not really. Weren't they carrying four tights?
I don't know. I just thought, I mean, he was a six-round pick. He's not like a second-round pick.
Right.
But I just thought, you know, that they'd give him more than one single solitary game. But that's life in the pros.
And I mean, it's a numbers.
I would think he'd hook up with somebody else, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. I mean, if he's gotten this far in a relatively short amount of time, there's going to be other teams out there that enjoy him. But for activating Wilson, did you see that one coming? I mean, I know that when it came down to cuts, he was one of the guys that seemed to be on the bubble.
Yeah, well, I mean, you get a guy, he was cut, you know, and then right. You put him on the practice squad. I would imagine that they will ask Caden Smith to just switch places and be on the practice squad. So we'll see what happens there. But anyway, so maybe he won't be leaving the building after all.
I got a Niners question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that in the immediate aftermath of last week's victory over the Buccaneers, everyone seemed to be okay with Jimmy G? Like, oh, thank God. He didn't look horrible. He looked fine. In fact, a couple of TDs were pulled back by penalties. So had those penalties not happened, he could have had three picks, whatever. All that seemed to matter was that he was infinitely better than the last couple times we had seen him. And it seemed like that performance maybe put some of the concerns to rest. But as we get further away from that game, I'm hearing louder and louder that Jimmy was terrible last week. So which one was it?
Well, he threw for a career low in yards.
Uh-huh.
I think it was like 166. One touchdown, one pick six. Jimmy Garoppolo basically said, to paraphrase, that we won the game, so I don't really care what happened.
Right.
If you really want to say the last time we saw him, when he got some significant time in preseason, he looked pretty well, but that's preseason.
Mm-hmm.
I've said it 100 times. I got no problem with Jimmy G. That is the absolute least, outside of tight end, starting tight end, that's the least of their problems, is their quarterback. But the quarterback is always going to get all the attention, Herbs. He'll get all the blame when he doesn't need it, and he'll get all the praise when he doesn't deserve it as well. When you look around the league, there are 20 teams right now that would take Jimmy Garoppolo off
right.
your hands
sure.
and have a parade. But you say, well, he's not proven yet. I mean, I sat in this town when Steve Young was playing, and all I heard from Niner fans were, he hasn't won the big one. You know, Montana right. did, and he did it. I go, you understand it's a team sport, right? Couldn't win the big one. I remember going to a Monday night game is against the Saints, and this was when Kerry Collins was the Saints quarterback.
Right.
And before he came to the Raiders after the Panthers and all that.
Didn't he play QB for every team?
I believe so. He was a Super Bowl quarterback at one point. I went to the Niner game, and Steve Young overthrew Jerry Rice, and the whole place booed. And
wow.
My buddy, season ticket holder, and I'm like, you guys are booing Steve Young? And he's like, I can't stand it. All people yell is Bill Walsh, the game has passed you by. And then whole sections, retire, old man. I mean, they were the most spoiled.
Directing that at Walsh?
Yeah.
Wow.
The most spoiled, ingrateful fan base. Well, I shouldn't say fan base. Certain idiot sections. I can't lump everybody together because my best friend was one and he knew how stupid it
right.
was. But, you know, the whole, and then Jeff Garcia got booed. Because then he wasn't Steve Young.
Right.
And Steve Young finally did win the big one. In fact, they put a 50 spot on the Chargers. And I loved that Super Bowl because I hate the Chargers.
Right.
I loved every second of that Super Bowl. So then Jeff Garcia, who, by the way, went to Pro Bowls and who, by the way, crushed some of Young and Montana's passing records. Mm-hmm. But he got booed because he wasn't Steve Young. I mean, it was just spoiled and spoiled, spoiled for a long time with that fan base. And I think, you know, some of the Warrior fan base is definitely spoiled. We saw how spoiled the Giants fan base gets. And I think that's just natural in sports. When you dominate, anything less is like, I want my money back. What the hell's going on?
Did you, this is related some way, did you see that the Astros' attendance numbers are starting to dip? It's like they've gotten bored with winning already. It's a relatively new thing in Houston.
Remember in Atlanta, call us when the playoffs start?
Yeah.
Right. 14 straight divisions.
That's rough. And, you know, Garcia got booed. I don't think it was for not being Steve Young. It was still for not being Joe Montana. It seems like every single quarterback that ever suits up for the Niners is going to be judged versus Joe Montana. And while, yeah, Steve Young, Hall of Famer, we all know what a great player he was, I still think everyone's going to hold every Niner quarterback to the Joe Montana standard.
Well, the thing is now, anyone who is 30 and under never saw Joe Montana play.
Which means he's even better than, right?
Or we're getting to the place where we're going to move on. It's sort of like, it's when I remember talking to Romo one time because we're the same age, and he's, you know, grew up in New England, and he went on a recruiting trip to Notre Dame. And he said they played this Four Horsemen movie, and he said he came out of there and wanted to put on a gold helmet and run through a brick wall. He just got so fired up. He ended up picking BC so his folks could see him play, and it was the right choice. He had an amazing career and got multiple rings. But for you and I, Notre Dame held that huge cachet, but we went through a long time there from the Jerry Faust era and then even with Ty Willingham, where these kids would grow up, and my dad would always say, oh, Notre Dame, and then I'd be, oh, look at Notre Dame. And then you realize these kids would go on recruiting trips, and they would go to Tallahassee, Miami, and girls are wearing Daisy Dukes and bikini tops. And then they go to South Bend, and it's snowing, and everyone's wearing North Face and Eddie Bauer. And you're like, yeah, but it's Notre Dame.
Right.
And they're like, the hell?
I
never even heard of it. That's you know, what relevance does that have to my generation? They would say. Because us were like, oh, it's Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And it still does carry, you know, a lot. I'm not saying it doesn't carry the cachet. I remember when Notre Dame came to Stanford when Charlie Weiss was the coach. And I got a look at Jimmy Clausen. And he was one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen in my life. He was skinny. He had a weak arm. He panicked. And I remember in the draft people saying, this guy's the most pro-ready because he played in the Weiss offense. And I'm like, I don't know what you people see in him. I think he's pathetic. But Notre Dame brought their own store to Stanford. They took over right near the stadium, somewhere on campus. There was a empty hall or something. They drove out these semi-trucks. And
they
it
did
was,
a pop-up store at Stanford.
Not even a pop-up store, a pop-up building.
Really?
They didn't construct a building, but they commandeered one. And it was row after row after rack after rack. So they had to have at least 20 people that just did that. But that's how strong the brand is anyway. I just don't know if it has the same cachet. I think we're getting back to it.
I mean, think about it. Over the past 25 years, how many of those years were the Irish legitimate title threats? You know, like...
Well, Lou Holtz had them going strong there.
That was a long time ago, though, right?
I mean,
90s. Any kid who is a recruit right now in high school, they have no concept of Notre Dame Fighting Irish being, you know, in the upper echelon of college football. It just hasn't been that way since they've been alive.
When I worked at Sports Channel, you know who hosted in South Bend the Lou Holtz show?
Lou Holtz?
Our friend Ted Robinson.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is he a Golden Domer?
That's a great question. I believe he is.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds familiar now.
I can't remember the last time Notre Dame was a legit title contender. Can you?
Last year? Yeah. Where's Gabe Osler? We can fight about it. 888-957-9570. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Justin in the 954, which I believe is Monkey's Eyebrow, Kentucky, he says Leon Washington was a 5-asterisk recruit who went to FSU over Notre Dame because of the girls. Probably meant 5-star, but I got it.
What says... Yeah, I mean, asterisk is the closest thing you have to a star, right?
I guess so. But what if you were a 5-asterisk recruit? That means that you took roids and you played in a 162-game schedule like Maris, all the famous asterisks out there. Asterisk the Viking or the Visikoff.
Your parents took money for a house, right?
I remember talking to a guy, and I'll obviously never say his name, but he showed up. I asked him why he picked this school, which I didn't. I thought he could have gone to a bigger school, and it's not a pretty story, but it's the truth. This was in the early 80s. said a girl picked him up in a convertible, and she drove him to a condo, and she said, this is your house, this is your car, and I'm your girlfriend. And he picked that school.
Wow.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, radio.com sports station, here with all your recruiting violations. 510 says, I'm 34, and I remember Joe Montana, but Steve Young was my quarterback growing up. Steve Young, for people who don't know, got so much grief because he didn't win a Super Bowl. And there was a trade. After all this grief, there was a trade. This was the rumor that he was traded to the Raiders for Tim Brown straight up. And I love me some Timmy Brown, but I was over the moon because I knew, we all knew Steve Young was a Hall of Fame guy. Yeah. From his times with the LA Express, we knew that, in the USFL. So I'm like, I hate to lose Tim Brown, but oh my gosh, we're going to get Steve Young. And then the rumor was at the last minute, when the Niners saw the reaction from Raiderville, that we were all ecstatic, he said to the DeBartolo said, Tim Brown and a number one. And then Al said, screw you.
Really?
Yeah.
Based on fan reaction in Oakland?
Yeah, from the media, whatever it was. But they tried to run Steve Young out of town here because he couldn't win a Super Bowl.
That's not why.
It's an individual sport.
It's because he wasn't Joe Montana.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Did he do? He threw 5 touchdown passes in the dome.
Well, and the assumption is that Joe was going to keep playing forever and throw 5 TDs every single week. Mm-hmm. I mean, as great as Joe Montana was, there's still a lot of fans that, you know, romanticized his time here. And it's hard to romanticize guys who've had that much success. But it wasn't all, you know.
It wasn't all,
it
wasn't
all sunshine and rainbows.
You can think about
Montana was here.
Jim Burton and that hit. And
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.